All right, make sure in fellowship as we are here addressing Isaac's endeavors in life and God blessing him immensely as he promised he would bless him in time. In that regards, the foundation of his prosperity comes through an unusual venue here as a patriarch, as we saw that he sows in the land, denoting that he got into the agricultural business, which obviously, why it may have been somewhat of a risk investment, considering a drought and famine. Otherwise, it did hold the potential of great return, as food would be a precious commodity, especially during this time of weather inclemency and lack of water and things of this nature. And God blesses him in this respect in a way that was exceeding, as he reaped a hundredfold or full measure. He had a full production of his crop, sowing within the very first year of his endeavors. And he obviously characterizes the adjusted believer who God greases their skids. What he sets his hand to, God blesses. This does not mean it's without testing. It doesn't mean that it's not, it's without any application and perseverance, etc., on the believer's part. But God overall greases his skids, which is seen to be what God is prone to do for the believer who locks into doctrine and keeps it as the number one priority in life. We saw, we're looking here at point 14, some verses that document God's attitude in this respect. We saw Psalm 1:3 for the believer who is willing to apply separation in regards to negative volition in life and their pursuits, etc., in time that's contradictory to doctrine, that God blesses them, prospers them in all that they do. Obviously, the caveat in that particular verse was the doctrine of separation. People wonder why God doesn't bless them maybe in certain areas of their life. Maybe there's areas of separation that they are refusing to align with. Obviously, if your buddies, your friends are the cosmic types, and that's who you hang with, that's who you embrace, etc., and you wonder why God's not blessing your life, well, maybe that's something you ought to consider. Keeping the law, holding these things close, means that you don't reject these doctrines. You're taking the doctrine across the board, etc. So, just another food for thought. Then, at point 14 here, the next verse in line is Proverbs 13, 21b. That was, first one was Psalm 1:3. Adversity pursues sinners. That looks at things being jammed in their life. Adversity, see. Things not going smoothly, not to one's likes and and desires, for those who let their sin nature dictate for them their path and course of life. In contrast to that, for our intents and purposes, but the righteous will be rewarded with prosperity. Obviously, that prosperity ultimately is manifested in our phase 3. But it also includes phase 2 prosperity. And again, it doesn't mean that you got to be a trillionaire to be prosperous. You can be prosperous in many aspects. Good health is a form of prosperity. Prosperous health, see. Things of this nature. So, all these things included, obviously, you recognize the natural course of life, getting older, things falling apart in that respect, etc. But still, God blesses you. Proverbs 28:25b. An arrogant man stirs up strife. A troublemaker creates dissension, conflict, contradictory. See, in regards to things in life, makes life somewhat chaotic otherwise. But he who trusts in the Lord will prosper. That looks at the application of faith rest. Looking to God to bless you and prosper you in your life. So you got to apply the doctrine. You've got to hold it clear, make it your number one priority. And be stable. The tree transplanted by water looks at stability. See, you're committed. Not in a bad sense, in a good sense. To the course in life. So those things have to be in place. And then applying the doctrine otherwise. And God will intercede on your behalf. And then you've got to, obviously, faith rest and trust God to bring about in the right time, according to His sovereign will. So a characteristic of fully adjusted believers is that whatever he sets his hand to, God prospers. Point 15. And the Lord blessed him, in regards to Isaac, fulfills the promise of verse 3a. I will bless you, see, as I brought out. If you remain oriented to my directive will to sojourn in this land, which includes geographical will, I'll be with you and bless you. That's Wild Barak Yahweh. The Lord blesses. See, the Lord blesses. The Bible teaches against socialism. God does not desire for men whom He blesses to be forced to share their wealth with others. Who are the others to say their wealth belongs to them? See, another's wealth belongs to them, that they have a right to it. God blesses whom He chooses to bless. And that's what people need to get over. See. But you get in a society that's socialistic, as our society has greatly become, you have that violation nationally, on a national level, in rejection of God's will for a nation. So 16, then sanctuary in Gerar fulfills the promise, I will be with you. God is present, evidences His presence, because you follow His geographical directive and geographical will, and you recognize you're where you're supposed to be. See? And then He blesses you in that situation. So 17, God took the initial impact of agricultural blessing, then using it as a catalyst to enhance all of Isaac's business endeavors. The man became rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. Obviously, if he's got a bumper crop of food, that allows for him then to expand whatever industry of cattle, servants, and things of this nature, and support these things. You can't, businesses often try to grow too fast. And they don't have a good foundation. They don't have the right support otherwise to handle even what they have. And most of these go under. Or they run to the government and get bailed out, whatever. So the blessing in the agricultural field then is translated into further wealth. As he continued to keep his nose to the grindstone, if you will, and let God do His thing with him. Wow, gadol ha'ish wa halak halak. To walk the walk. Wow, gadol, aki gadol, me'od. So 18, as we brought out in the parsing, the Hebrew looks to the progressive nature of Isaac's increasing wealth over time, in contrast to instantaneous wealth. Nineteen, the phrase continued to grow is literally the Hebrew, and he walked to walk, emphasizing his persistence and purpose to remain steadfast at his job to achieve success. So the initial endeavor is finding that business, if you will, profession. That the door is open, you step in, and that's your initial return of your labor's investment. Here for Isaac is agriculture. And then as he sticks with it and hangs in there and perseveres, maintaining commitment to his endeavors and his profession, God continues to bless him otherwise, overall. And so you have the initial fairly fast prosperity, that'd be like finding the right job, and then you have the aspect of hanging in there with it, see, to continue to maintain steadfastness, perseverance in regards to your business at hand. And over time, you'd be surprised how that wealth may grow. Obviously, if you're constantly bolting and seeking different avenues, etc., you really do not have the stability that one would expect to find overall prosperity towards the end. I've been in many kinds of businesses for a while. I was basically a jack of all trades. I was in the oil field. I was doing construction. I was in retail sales, you know, offloading semis, you name it, UPS. I've worked, I had 100 jobs, you know. And what did I do? Well, I had enough to party. That's all I cared about. Did I have any savings in the bank? No. Was I getting ahead financially? No. I was constantly changing. Of course, I didn't give a rat's behind. I didn't care. If you're that kind of attitude, all right, you can be a bum, be the hippie, you know, that type of thing. But if you want to make it work, you got to hang in there. And obviously, that demands that one is acclimated and oriented to where God has put you to hang in there in that situation, unless God makes it obvious that you are to change. Otherwise, see. And over time, and you see it. I mean, it's common. People that hang in there and have worked the same place for years on year in and commit to that. The end result is they're completely self-sufficient and they have prosperity and enjoyment of life after the fact. See, obviously, prosper during the time. But over time, then, you know, there's the goods. But it takes commitment. And that takes patience. That takes faith rest. That takes orientation to doctrine. And his wealth was progressive. His overall wealth, see. That looks the general overall result of your investment of labor to begin with. Twenty, here God blesses applications over and beyond the norm. God chooses Isaac as well as his father Abraham and predecessors to bless him in this regard. And not everybody's going to be equal in terms of that blessing. Our blessings will be whatever God puts before us. And again, acclimation to one's niche. Part of my problem back in the days was, you know, I wasn't acclimated. I constantly needed a change. I had the wanderlust. Just couldn't stay seated anywhere. But finally, I grew out of it. That's what happens when you get married. Even though that's not always the end-all, be-all either. So God blesses applications over and beyond the norm. 21, with the foundation of his farming success and what ranching and service assets he arrived with, these things then ballooned into great acquisitions of wealth. You've got to invest and then reinvest. That reinvestment comes in regards to your giving of your time and labor and commitment and loyalty in regards to whatever you're pursuing. When I finally got in the real estate business, it didn't make big bucks to begin with. Made pittance compared to some people. And other people's attitudes that looked at doing the same job, oh, I can't live on that. Well, I've been living on it for 10 years. What's your problem? Or whatever. But then over time, when God determined he wanted to bless me, he blessed me. Just when you think he's going to really bless you big, you get a church. Well, you move. So, what it is. That's what it is. That's your niche. My niche. But then God's blessed me there. Here. I'm amazed. I've never been without. And look at the size of our church. And the size of that other adjusted local churches. That obviously speaks highly of the applications. But that's what God does. He puts you with the right people. All of us. See. But anyway. We moved into this property. Meeting in a little garage. Some of the other pastors, they saw how small that garage was and they came in our building. You met there for how long? This number of people? Persevere. Hung in there with it. Applications made. And here we are. See. Not too big, not too small. We are the perfect Goldilocks and the three bears. You keep thinking, well, maybe we didn't get enough room. Yeah, okay, hang around for a few weeks. So, God knows. God knows all these things. If he wants to bless us more, he will. Otherwise, we are to acclimate, orient, and be thankful for what you have. I've had more vacations at a higher level of experience than I ever did in working a real job being a pastor. It's not anything out of me that's exceptional. Applications of doctrine. God has me here, right people, right things. Things just happen. So, I could go on and on, but I won't bore you. Until I get back from my next vacation. 21. Again, with the foundation of his farming success and what ranching and service assets he arrived with, these things ballooned into great acquisitions of wealth. 22. The ultimate results are expressed in verse 14. Here in his building a portfolio, for he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household. Wahayal Amad Mekanah Tison, that's flocks of sheep. Wah Mekanah Bakar, herds of cattle or oxen. Wah Abuda, household servants. Many, Rob. 23. For such economic success to occur during an otherwise economic decline of famine is an anomaly in the natural setting. This shouldn't be happening under the human viewpoint, perception of things. You shouldn't be prospering at a time of famine like this. What's going on here? Well, obviously, God's not limited. He's the one who brought the famine. He can sidestep you anywhere he wants to push you to miss it. See? So, it's looking to God. And Isaac kept his eyes focused in that regard in spite of his weaknesses otherwise. And God was with him. So 24, for Isaac, in regards to the blessing now, follows testing. For Isaac, it meant that it would become the center of desire by others not so fortunate. Well, I want to have all this. Well, guess what? You get it, you're going to have testing anyway. Well, it'd be more fun to be tested that way than be the one tested without. Well, maybe, maybe not. The world can be cruel for one who gets ahead. Our society reeks of envy and jealousy of others by those who don't want to do shit. You get what I mean? To get ahead in life, see? You got a 5-second delay on that tape, don't you, back there?
Gotcha.
Sorry about that. 25, this blessing in turn becomes a test. As the Philistines not adjusted to God's will, envied him. Our verb, kana, eth, the suffix, him. Envy. Here's a sin that we haven't really addressed a whole lot. But it's amazing through the study just how pertinent it is in regards to being oriented in life or not. It's just how damaging this STA is, this STA aspect. So 26, their envy was in reaction to watching this foreigner become more wealthy and powerful off their land that itself did not provide them with an equal return on investment. People will often do that. Well, that's not fair. Like the sheriff in Unforgiven, he's about ready to die. Well, that wasn't fair. I don't deserve this. Clint Eastwood, it's not about deserves. It's not about fair. It's about whom God chooses to bless or he doesn't. So they see what's happening in his world. And they're going, why is he so special? Why is he an exception? Why is God blessing him and not blessing us? Read the Bible. 27, Isaac's prosperity stirred the lust of the Philistines to be discontent with their own fortunes, promoting ill will his direction. Envy led to antagonism, hatred. People, all of us, at some point and level, become discontent. Discontentment is nothing more than your SCA maladjustment to the life that God's given you. And usually it stems from failure to isolate the sin nature in some or human viewpoint somewhere in your life. Not willing to put your eyes on God. You get them on people, you get them on circumstances, situations. Your direction, your focus has been short-sheeted. You can't see phase three. You're all cramped up. You ever had that happen to you? Basic training. That's always fun to do in basic training. Short sheet. The troublemaker. We didn't beat him with soap. Short-sheeted him. At least that word's coming out right. So his prosperity, and this is what will happen for those who were familiar with him, around him, is stirred up their SCA. And they quickly become discontent with their own lives. And they want what he has. See, that's your envy. They want what he has. 28, Jesus said that when believers prosper, they can expect persecution. For the believer that's being blessed for something like this to occur should not catch him off guard. Should be prepared. You got to understand the world, the cosmos, under the rulership of Satan, does not want to see positive volition prospered and God blessing others in spite of the misery, the turmoil, or whatever else they're facing in life. Mark 10:30, to be persecuted. Again, I didn't write these verses, but separation is an issue. Verse 29, Jesus said, "Truly I say to you, there is no one who is left," separated, removed themselves, a house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or farms, the caveat, "for my sake and for the gospel's sake, in service to Jesus Christ in alignment to the truth of Bible doctrine." You apply the doctrine of separation and what you may have to give up and sacrifice to do so. See, that's the idea. But the promise is, for those who persevere, will orient to this, God will return their loss with hundredfold investment, basically. But as much but that he shall receive, he goes on to say why they do this, but that he shall receive 100 times as much now in the present age. That's blessing in time. You don't have to wait to phase 3 for all blessing. See? Houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and farms, farm being business, one giving up a profession or whatever, in order to stay aligned with God's geographical pastoral will. Bible doctrine, yada, 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 knowledge, 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 along with persecutions expected to come along. People don't like it. You're not willing to embrace business and fellowship with those in business that compromise your NPR and doctrinal fortitude otherwise in life. I face that. Many believers on doctrine have faced that in their businesses. People want to gravitate towards you, want you to become part of their fold, hang out with them in the business world, and they promote it, you know, get your connections, your ties, etc. Go party with them and all these other things. And everybody rubs everybody else's back, scratches their back, whatever the saying is. You know. And you'll get prospered and go hang out with the boss, go drink with him, the owner of the company, or whatever. You know. Well, there's nothing wrong in doing these things in and of itself, but if it compromises the doctrine, it's on Bible class night. I wouldn't mind doing it another time. I can't tonight. You got to get on the game, the bandwagon. You know, they want to promote some sport or whatever. You know, I faced all those kind of little tests. And I'll hang. I'll stay after work and do this. But at this time, I've got to leave. And everybody looks at you like you're condescending. Well, are you better than us? You think you're more spiritual than us? Yeah, you put up with it. Persecution. That's a form of persecution. To belittle you or look down upon you or to assess you unrighteously. And in the days to come, eternal life. And its fullest. See, all this was for us. We got something exceptional going on. And our application, what we receive in time, will transcend time. And it'll be manifested in a way that we can't even explain now, of greatness in terms of blessing for eternal life. So, with the blessing comes the testing. And here's persecution by the Philistines because of envy. 29, persecution and strife easily arises out of envy. James brought that to bear. Remember back in that book, James 4, 2. Obviously, it reflects upon all the multitude of SE activities that revolve around certain sins, giving you a more complete picture. It's not like your SCA, you have one little sin, and that's all there is. Now, if it's not arrested and dealt with, then it multiplies. And then you find yourself in other areas of sin. If you don't capture it and put it in its cage, see, and overrule it. What is the source of feuds and fights, literally, among you, James, writing to the churches? Believers' failure to apply doctrine, failure to isolate the sin nature, failure to apply, especially in terms of prayer, often, is not the source of pleasures that wage war in your members. That's a reference to the sin nature, the lust grid. You lust and do not have, desire something, but yet doesn't look like God's blessing you with it, see. So you commit murder. The murder is not physical homicide. It's mental attitude murder. Because you see what others have that God's bestowed upon them, and you want that. And it's called envy. And you are envious and cannot obtain, to be properly motivated. You have to isolate the sin nature. It happens in all ranks of life. Envy. I've seen and heard of other pastors being envious of other pastors because maybe their church is bigger or whatever, see, because they had some insight that in doctrine that they didn't have. Why would you be envious? Something like that. Man, I'd be thankful that somebody had that insight. You know. So you are envious and cannot obtain. So you fight and feud. You do not have because you do not ask. Your prayer life sucketh. You're more interested in self-service than you are serving God. You're more interested in letting the energy of the flesh dictate your life rather than let God dictate your life. Impatience. The impetuous nature of the youthful lust trend as part of the youthful lust is being impetuous. Can't wait. Got to have it now. So persecution and strife easily arises out of envy. See, it feeds it. Envy feeds these things. Hostility and antagonism. Unrighteous judgment against others. A plethora of sins could come out of it. 30, the Philistines express their animosity here now by trashing the water wells left by Abraham. That's the emphasis of now all the wells which his father's service had dug. They stopped up by filling them with earth. That verse's reaction is their reaction to their envy towards Isaac. While Kol, Be'er, Asher, Hagar, Eber, Ab, Zethan, while Male, Afar. So, really, this is, it just shows you how irrational the SCA can become. Here they're in a time of famine. And actually, somebody is able to have success at farming and agriculture that they could benefit from. But he becomes more and more wealthy. They become envious. They want what he has. They are discontent with their own life. And obviously that implies that they're not really prospering themselves. And the most precious commodity to make all this happen is water. And what do? They go out and they stop up all the wells that had already been dug previously by labor of another individual that they didn't have to do nothing to have source that water source for themselves. It's just crazy. Obviously, when you look at it from the divine perspective. So 31, Isaac passively does not contest this crime. Even though his father had entered into a goodwill treaty with Abimelech's predecessor. Genesis 21, 22 through 32, again, is the recount of Abimelech and Abraham's pact. And how we have deciphered all this is going to bear fruit for us here in this chapter. And that is Abimelech, there's possible issue there. Abraham ends up providing the witness necessary for him. And he goes on possible issue, and the nation basically becomes adjusted, as a nation of believers, basically. Now you have another generation, so you have another parallel that's going on here. But at that point in time, Abimelech made a pact, as we know, with Abraham. Genesis 21, 22 through 32. Where Abimelech, Phicol, the commander of the army, spoke to Abraham, saying, God is with you in all that you do. So they make a pact. They swear to each other. They treat each other with equal respect. And freedom, and not to be hostile towards one another. It's basically a peace treaty. Verse 23, swear to me hereby God, God, that you will not deal falsely with me, or with my offspring or my posterity, according to the kindness that I have shown to you, as he graced Abraham out over the sister, wife is my sister, affair, etc. He showed to me into the land in which you have sojourned. So, in general, the pact is basically you're free to live here in the land and utilize it for your own resources. See? And then there is a particular area where legally Abraham was given full rights to a well. That's the well of Beersheba. Now that's the only one mentioned that he was specifically given the rights to. That comes up in the grievance of Abraham to Abimelech in the next verses. As he complained to Abimelech, verse 25, because of the well of water which the servants of Abimelech had seen. That well is one named Beersheba. And that's where they made the pact. They jump up to verse 32, not to redo all this. Verse 31, therefore he called that place Beersheba because the two of them took an oath, this well. So they made a covenant of Beersheba. And Abimelech, Phicol, the commander of his army, arose and returned to the land of the field. We're going to see this again. Beersheba is going to come into view again. But also, you got to recall, even though there is a general attitude, still, Abraham is still a foreigner. The land still belongs to Philistines, but legally, it is only that well of Beersheba that he was given the rights, as he told his people, to back off of, and that he would handle that situation for him in that regards. So, anyway, I'm telling you this, keep these things in your thoughts. Because as we go through this, these things will come to bear again. So, even though the previous relationship with his father was one of freedom to locate where he wanted to, use the resources of the land otherwise for his own person as well, which would mean water sources. necessary to sustain his livelihood. And that was the attitude beforehand that was to be passed down to generations. Isaac doesn't contest it. See, he approaches it in a passive way. So 32, in fact, the king now succumbs to the pressure of his people and exiles Isaac from the vicinity as he tells him to go away from us. Halak ben Im, verse 16. 33, his actions will later be reconsidered when we get to verse 26 following Abimelech, and now with his commander titled Phicol. And another person shows up on this scene. They will reapproach Isaac and reestablish a treaty with him in regards to maintaining peace between the people. So maybe you can see a little bit where this might be headed. But anyway, Abimelech's actions will later be reconsidered, but in the immediate context paints a different ethic profile from the king of Abraham's time. You didn't see that from Abimelech of Abraham's time. In other words, this is a continued argument that we're dealing with two different Abimelechs here. That Abimelech, he immediately just opened his arms and freed him to the land, basically to Abraham, even after Abraham did what he did in regards to bringing potential destruction on the nation with his wife Sarah. So you see a different personality, a different approach that's going on, and different ethics are being applied. It's not one of grace. This king looks to be easily swayed by the peoples, and maybe even for himself. Maybe even he's envious. Yes, he is. He's a king, and he's still not getting prospered like this. No. 34, now the lax attitude overall regarding sexual freedom in the kingdom that was implied in Rebekah's my sister affair and a weak, unjust reaction to crime now all seem to point to a rapidly moral, spiritual decline in the Philistine kingdom with the first generation from Abraham's time. That is the picture being presented, I see, in regards to this situation. The first, his predecessor, probably his father, went on polyvolition. Many people in the nation went on polyvolition, became believer, released the nation, established a peace accord with God's chosen. And now you have the next generation coming in. And it just goes to show how fast spiritual degeneration can occur and deterioration over a generation. See? And you don't have the same type of setting. You don't have the same type of atmosphere that we saw in the previous administration of Philistia. So, as I brought out, Abimelech doesn't deny the cause of Isaac's fear of another one killing him to get Rebekah for their own trophy wife. And he doesn't lay a law across the land to show that has now been excluded as any activity allowed. He only provides protection specifically for Isaac and Rebekah in those terms. And that's because he knows history. And he knows Isaac is part of Abraham's lineage. And he knows what happened to his previous father, previous king in this regard. Okay, well, don't touch this guy. See? But it doesn't mean that that they're highly moral otherwise. It's just common sense, as any ruler would probably use that would be that closely familiar with a previous situation. So 35, now the excuse for kicking Isaac out is, quote, "For you are too powerful for us." Key of Psalm Men Meod. 36, he uses a political ploy that Isaac may use his strength adversely and seek political dominance. That's basically the gist of his reasoning. Too powerful. They overcome us. Usurp us. It's a hostile takeover. Looking at it in economic terms. 37, there is of course no danger here. And Abimelech missed a chance to bless the current representative of the covenant, failing to meet the high standards of his predecessor. So here he falls drastically short. In fact, he is setting the nation on a road to come into a cursing cycle in regards to their attitude towards the promised seed. Those who bless you, I will bless. Those who curse you, I will curse. But as we'll see, he finally makes an adjustment. But anyway, we'll get there when we get there. 38, so Isaac, without protest, leaves where he is no longer welcome. Okay, no skin off my back. I'm out of here. You don't want me here? Fine. You know, rather than sit there and get all emotional and beg, oh, I'm going to leave. You don't want any part of my life. You don't want any part of God in my life. Then move on. If you don't have that kind of stamina and fortitude in your application of doctrine, you will fail miserably in the doctrine of separation. I'm here to tell you. Sometimes it just takes it. See? And that is looking at it in the proper perspective, from God's perspective. You don't want a relationship with God. You want to undermine what I'm all about through your own misdeeds, misactions, and negative volition, reversionism. Well, move on. See? Anyway. See if I can get us through the rest of this here real quick. 39, he moves from living conditions of a more permanent domicile back to a tent. obviously, the implication of moving to where he camped means that he might have more permanent type of dwelling facility when he was where he was building his industry. He had time to get things constructed. So now he's back to, if you will, living off the land in a tent. 40, God blesses and God tests. With the blessing comes a testing, and often vice versa. With the testing comes a blessing. It is reciprocal in that regards. 41, like his father in Egypt, Isaac is evicted from the place. Another parallel, another similarity. 42, but in Isaac's case, it was undeserved suffering. It was unjust. And all this is truly painting for us the picture of Isaac spiritually, where he's at. He's up there. I don't care what his weaknesses might have been otherwise. In his orientation to God's plan, this guy was on the ball. Isaac was. I know he's painted to be weak and just extremely passionate. Not from this passage, he's not. Now, the silence of Isaac shows his fortitude, his determination to faith rest and put things in God's hands. See? And by doing that, he receives undeserved suffering. Abraham had deserved suffering from Pharaoh. See. 43, living in tents is commemorative or commemorated in the Feast of Tabernacles, which the Jews observe to this very day. The tabernacle was a tent, an elaborate tent, able to be moved about in their nomadic tenure of life. See. Through the wilderness, etc. 44 is a constant reminder of God's deliverance from slavery and oppression being aliens in Satan's world. That puts you in a different category of how you will be treated in the cosmos, how you are looked upon in the cosmos. For those who do not adhere and subscribe to the doctrine, the entire counsel that we seek to subscribe to across the board. And it can be just different areas. And it still has an impact in a negative way, generally, in relationships. 45, rather than exacerbate the situation, Isaac diffuses it by moving, putting his trust in God to continue to bless him no matter the circumstances. There may be a time to defend oneself, etc. But that comes through discernment. In this situation, really, he is a foreigner. He's an alien in the land. And he respects that. This is what you see from him. He respects that. They want him to move. Okay, I'll move. If you don't want me here, fine. And doesn't give any lip over it. Doesn't argue over it. He sees a potential conflict that's rising. And rather than stir it up some more by reacting, he applies doctrine to diffuse the thing. And that's obviously the best approach. Generally, if you have opportunity in a potential conflict to diffuse it, that's the way to go. See, as long as you don't have to compromise doctrine to do it, obviously. But he's not being asked to compromise doctrine. 46, blessing in time isn't immunity from testing, but it's inclusive of it, as these combined events advance the believer spiritually, gaining additional appreciation for the blessings that do come upon them. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light us to these things. In Jesus' name, amen.